Welcome to New Realities. My name is Alan Steinfeld, and this series is an ongoing investigation into transformation that's happening on the planet, an awakening of many ancient spiritual traditions and new knowledge coming forward. Tonight's guest is someone who studied these ancient traditions and is teaching people about its modern-day connection. His name is Vincent Bridges. Thanks, Vincent, for being here.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Yeah,
highly
recommended, and looking at your website, you have a real overview of the Western mystery tradition, which many people think that spirituality doesn't really exist in the West. They look to the East, but there's a great long tradition of that. Do you want to say something about the sort of underground Western mysteries?
Yeah, underground, that's the right word. Orthodox Christianity, the official church, has done its best through the years to wipe out what mystery tradition, quote-unquote, there actually was in the West. So we do feel a little bit dispossessed when we look at the East and see great spiritual cultures and tradition, and we look around and go, oh, well, what happened here in the West? Well, Christianity bears, the official church of Christianity bears a lot of the blame, and it's just sort of an accident of history that we've come at all of these spiritual awarenesses and understandings of the universe in a whole different direction, and that direction is sort of the methodology of science and being very materialistic. But whichever direction you choose, whichever discipline you choose, eventually you come to that irreducible moment in which you have the Einsteinian aha of, okay, wait a minute, there's really something going on here beyond the level that I can personally make sense of. You know, that spiritual moment, you might say.
Right. And that's where we're coming to in the West. We're seeing that Christianity and the other Western religions really do not talk about that awakening, that aha. Uh-huh. So many people turn to the East because that's quite a developed literature. But, you know, everything
and
that's...
For a while there, it was very hip to, you know, have your guru, you know, all the way back to the Beatles. But spirituality really is a matter of what works for you on a practical level. And if we get too caught up in, oh, I'm a Buddhist, oh, you're a Christian, I'm a Muslim, whatever, we may miss what's essential to all of them. So,
what is essential?
I'm sort of a generalist.
I'm just saying, what is that essential thing to all of them? What is essential to all these things?
When you boil it down, it's really just two things. Pay attention, you know. Consciousness goes where your awareness points it, and be kind to one another, love one another. And that's sort of the point at which all humans can sort of agree about some basis for starting a spiritual awareness, you know, consciousness and compassion.
I mean, I think another big difference, I mean, that's true of all religions and true of humanity. Yeah, we're here to be kind to each other and to pay attention. But what I think is unique to the Western mind is that there was a way of playing with the universe, a kind of interaction like the alchemist. It's not like, oh, it's all God, it's all beautiful. It's like, no, we can manipulate reality through its basic elements, which is the alchemical and the earth mysteries and John Dee and all these people that you talk about, right? I mean, so what's that deeper level of activating, how to tune into that?
Well, that's the great paradigm of East versus West. Here in the West, we like to fiddle with things. We like to take it apart and rearrange it and see if we can put it together. Maybe better, you know, maybe not. Whereas the West, in the West, we have this idea that we can you know, make changes. And in the East, it's not that direct of an intervention. So it's a basic quality, you might say, that led to magic and science. In these times, there wasn't really a separation between the two.
Mm-hmm.
Dee was sort of like the Einstein, Dr. John Dee, Queen Elizabeth's court astrologer and sort of head intelligencer. Mm-hmm. He was sort of like the Einstein of the 16th century, the smartest man on the planet. And when he came to what he considered to be the boundaries of what was human knowledge in the 16th century, he just decided to bump it up a notch. Okay, well, I'll talk to the angels. Maybe they know more than we do. And, you know, that's a fairly fascinating concept to say that, okay, my natural science includes things that most people would consider quite unnatural, i.e. angels. Mm-hmm. But yet, when you sort of look at what Dee and Kelly did with their angelic sessions, you begin to realize that, okay, wait a minute, they were in contact with what we can only call a higher form of intelligence. But guess what? That higher intelligence actually lives inside our own DNA in every cell of our being. It's a consciousness at a much deeper, much higher level than certainly anyone in the 16th century could have imagined. And we have problems even getting our brain around it at this point in the 21st century.
What did John Dee actually know? Because he did more than speak with the angels. He manifested these beings, right? Ours and all those stories about Kelly and Dean creating these beings that appeared and, you know.
Well, in most of the stories that you hear in the English-speaking world are sensational, based mostly on Dee's perspective, and really give you perhaps a skewed view of the whole process. But yes, Dee decided to ask the angels or higher intelligence for some basic answers, for some basic insights into how the universe worked. And over the course of 6 or 7 years, the angels on a day-to-day basis, 2 or 3 sessions a week, communicated through the clairvoyance of Edward Kelly. He would sit and stare into a crystal ball, and the angels present these little Elizabethan, almost Shakespearean plays. The curtain would open and things would happen, and Kelly would report what he saw, and Dee would take notes. And the amazing thing is the amount of time and the complexity that these whole new systems of thought took to transmit to these people who didn't quite get it. They didn't have the math, basically, or the geometry in a certain sense, to really understand what the angels were giving them, which is what makes it fairly amazing. In other words, they were given this huge amount of information that took them years to copy down very carefully, and then they had no way of understanding it for, you know, 400 years or so until mathematics and biology had caught up with the concepts that the angels had given them. So this is, if we have one clear proof in history of man's contact with higher intelligence, then it might just be Dee and Kelly's conversations with the angels.
Because they were actually they used that knowledge not just to entertain themselves, but they applied that knowledge and created things that then manifested in the world, right?
Well, we really don't know about that. That's an interesting discussion, shall we say. A large portion of the angelic Enochian material that they received was never used by them because the angels very clearly told them that it was for a future time period. And when you line up the stars that the angels were talking about as being indicators of this future time period, you discover something very interesting, which is the time period that the angels intended this vast mass of information to be used for, in, about, is the time period we're in right now. And it's like, so what exactly does that mean? And when you look at it, it's not so much, the usual, you know, how do I call up an entity and make him bring me a bag of gold? No, this was science, literally, at a level that was far beyond Dee and Kelly, and is at a level that we're just beginning to understand the possibilities of right now. For instance, in some of the information the angels gave Dee and Kelly, there are clear mathematical patternings, mathematical structures that relate to the geometrical fourth dimension, okay, which is a concept that wasn't really around until the beginning of the 20th century.
Right.
So the angels are using these concepts 300-400 years before that in a very, very complex system, and that system seems to be, I don't know, time sensitive to the era that we are in right now.
Well,
and that's pretty entertaining.
Well, but then it means people like you can now take and decipher what those angels said to Dee and Kelly and apply it somehow, right? So what can we do with that information that seems so current?
Well, applying it, Dee kept meticulous records. He was one of these OCD people that tended to write everything down. And this was the most important thing that was happening, other, of course, than the execution of Mary, Queen of Scots, and the Spanish Armada that the angels also talked about before they happened. It's like this was the most important thing in Dee's life, so he kept meticulous records. So we know fairly clearly, with a certain amount of ambiguity, what the angels meant when they would describe these things. So we know how to put it together, and we know how the angels meant for it to look and work, but it doesn't make any sense on the surface beyond that. Why would they waste an enormous amount of time with these huge tablets filled with letters, and why are they so precise about these letters having these qualities, and why this intricate, interrelated system of numbers and letters and structures? And again, Dee and Kelly did virtually nothing with the core of this. And at the core of it, there is a real language. Not a natural language. It didn't evolve over time. It was sort of a given language, a revealed language. But it is a language that has a grammar and a syntax. It makes sense. And again, it was given at different times over a space of years and then matched up later by Dee and Kelly with the English translation. So it's a real language. It's something that came from somewhere else. And as you delve into the core of this language, you discover that it relates very directly to DNA. In other words, the language itself seems to be an expression, an extrusion of our DNA, which has implications on who these angels, quote-unquote, are that Dee and Kelly were talking to. But all of this seems designed to do something very particular. And it's a bit of a reach to get to that point, but I'll just kind of jump ahead.
Yeah.
Imagine that you are an intelligent being who is semi-sentient. In other words, you live inside of DNA. And that you have a thermostat. And that thermostat tells you when the species inside whose DNA you're inhabiting is about to kill themselves or go extinct through some cosmic disaster. And that thermostat then clicks on, and then certain extrusions or projections from your DNA manifest as beings and inform the species as best these beings can on what to do to prevent the disaster. And that's apparently what Dee and Kelly tapped into in the 16th century. Is these very intelligent, higher intelligence, in fact, from inside, from the DNA, that gave them a system and a language and a connection that would allow humanity as a species to perhaps survive without serious modifications or catastrophes the events that we're about to experience. And I can go on from there.
That's fascinating. So you're saying they tapped in the 16th century what we would be now experience as this turning point where we can go extinct as a species, or we can go to the next level of our evolution.
Absolutely. That's very clearly put. If right. you consider that the best estimate for what's going to happen roughly 2012, 2013, is something similar to a Carrington event, which we've been having several little solar burps in the last few months.
What's a Carrington event? You said it's similar to a
Carrington.
Yeah, what is that?
That was a professor who observed sunspot and solar flare cycles in the 19th century.
Oh.
And he observed a particular pattern which results in a very unstable corona and large chunks of the sun's surface being thrown out into space. And that if the arrangement of the planets are right, it could be pulled directly toward the Earth or directly toward other planets. And that would be a very disastrous event. We had one in the middle of the 19th century that was so intense that the aurora borealis was seen all the way to the equator for almost a year. Because we didn't have any electronics in the 19th century, it didn't cause the kind of disruption it was now. It would now. It would destroy your computers and take down your cell phone networks and so forth. So the best guess from most of the scientific end of the spectrum, so to speak, is that something similar to a Carrington event is due roughly 2012 or so. And if that were the case, it could be either as catastrophic an event as something like depicted in the Nicolas Cage movie Knowing, in which pretty much all life is wiped out on the planet down to about a kilometer below the surface. That would be really bad. There'd be no way to deal with that. Or it could be somewhere in the mid-range, which means that there would be a lot of disruption with electronics. There would be a lot of disruption with the Earth's magnetic field. And then basically there would be a lot of disruption with both the weather and human DNA and plant DNA, animal DNA. That if the explosion from the sun were serious enough, then there could be, like you said, an extinction-level kind of a very severe event.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what the DNA angels from the 16th century seem to be suggesting is that when certain signs in the sky line up in the right direction, then these great tables or great filters can be projected around the space of the Earth, so that the incoming energy, the incoming radiation in this great solar burp, this Carrington event, could then be moderated through these filters so that humanity wouldn't have to undergo such extreme, and the Earth itself, such extreme catastrophic changes and such distortions and mutation in our genotypes and so forth. So that's a very quick sort of science fictional look at it. But I've been exploring this possibility fairly seriously for the last couple of years. We have groups in Europe that have been trying to learn the basic Enochian angelic, or as we call it, the Ophanic material. And we are going to try to see if we can get enough people around the planet by June of 2012 to put these Enochian alphabetic filters up around the planet.
Wait,
we're still here by June 2013, we'll know we did a good job, right?
But first of all, where is there a book where this is written, this thing that they deciphered?
Well, there's any number of books available about John Dee, and there are several books out there that include his diaries with most of the angelic sessions. I couldn't quote chapter and verse off the top of my head. Five Books of Mystery is one, and then there's a collection from the diaries. And then in most of the Western tradition, circa the Golden Dawn at the turn of the 19th, 20th century, you can find bits and pieces of the Enochian material.
Right. So what kind of
another good book?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Another good book.
Yeah.
By the name of Enochian Evocation by Jeffrey James. That one is simple enough to stick in my head fairly easily.
But what kind of Enochian keys should we start to manufacture? Is there something you can tell us to do that will...
Now, did you ever read the old science fiction novel Stranger in a Strange Land?
I read parts of that.
One of the MacGuffins of that novel is the idea of learning Martian, and that when you learn Martian, your psychic abilities tend to go up as you learn to think in Martian.
Uh-huh.
And Enochian Ophanic is the equivalent of in a certain sense, of that Martian. That the first thing we need to do is to start learning the language. Now, we do have a book called The Ophanic Revelation. It's out in Italian, and it will be out in English and Czech probably sometime in the new year. So if you just do a Google search on that, it will be out there.
Okay.
I'm also up on Dan Winter's website. There are several places you can come across the work we're doing.
But this Enochian keys, is that something you would make or what?
No, actually, it's language. They're called calls or keys, and they are a system of opening doorways, so to speak. And it's the simplest way to think of this is. Think of the fact that you are on a desert island with no way to communicate, and a huge tidal wave is bearing down on you.
Mm-hmm.
And up ahead, there's a rescue helicopter. And they can't pick you up and get you off the island, so they're going to drop certain rescue materials to you.
Right.
And one of those rescue materials would be a simple, easy-to-build and power radio, for instance. And another mm-hmm. might be a life raft, you know, a way
right.
to kind of... get away from the wave. Right? So that's what the Enochian material is. It's, first of all, a very simple way to build a trans-dimensional, to use a science fictional word, computer, communication device.
Well,
you simply have to learn the language and then be able to plug it into the structures, and then you can open this communication channel.
So specifically... If we read these books and we start to understand what the angels were saying to him, you're saying a certain thing would be activated within us that would make us more aware of these other levels? Is that what you're saying?
Well, to a certain degree, but that's probably giving a certain amount of the wrong impression.
Okay, so I want to just get the practical.
The material.
Yeah.
Okay. To the practical, there's very few people at the moment actually working on this subject from this direction. And like I said, we have two small groups, one in Italy and one in the Czech Republic, who are working on it. In the next year or so, we're going to sort of broaden the reach. We're going to start looking for a way to reach more people once we have a core group sort of developed. So we're really sort of at the beginning stage of reaching out to a large group of people.
I see.
Once the book, The Ophanic Revelation, is in English, then we can do a lot more to spread the word. We'll have an actual volume you can go to in which all of these ideas are discussed and a way to approach the basic concepts.
Well, we
but
only...
it's not something...
Yeah.
I'm sorry?
No, I was just saying we only have 2 years to prepare, so or something like that.
Yeah, well, that's right.
Because it's coming down fast, right? I mean, it's
yeah. Well, it's not. How should we put it? It's not my timing, but sort of the universe's timing. So at the moment, we're working on the preliminaries, and then we'll see where it goes. This is, on a larger sense, one of my broader fascinations. I actually am interested in the 16th century as one of these really key esoteric time periods.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a bit of an authority on Nostradamus. I've done a few TV shows.
Yeah.
And he's one of those highlights of the 16th century, along with Shakespeare and Dee and Rudolph II and all of these amazing personalities, Elizabeth and Philip. And
yeah, and also the invention of the lenses, the telescope and the microscope all sort of began with that development in the 16th century as well.
Yeah, well, actually, microscopes took a little bit longer to put together, but John Dee had a telescope.
Mm-hmm.
And we have quite a bit of evidence from Prague that there were telescopes being made in Prague in the 1570s and 1580s.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a little bit before anyone had thought. Mm-hmm. But Dee in his diary records leaving or selling a very elaborate telescope to Rudolph II. So we know they were around. That's part of the mystery.
So the 16th century was sort of a doorway. It was really the beginning, in a sense, of the modern era, the sophistication.
Right.
You know. Yeah.
Right. If you think roughly in planetary ages of roughly 400, 420 years, which is how Dee thought of things, then they thought of the time period around the Armada, 1588, as one of these planetary shift points.
Yeah.
We were entering the last 400 years of history. And, you know, it looks like they were pretty right on that one.
We'll see.
Gotta give them that. Yeah.
But
so far,
so,
they've been pretty accurate.
So what about this facet? So you're saying by studying the 16th century, which was the opening of a doorway, we can sort of see what's coming up now. That was the beginning.
Actually, that's very correct, because the fascination with the time period and Dee and Kelly and so forth has to do with the fact that everyone in Europe in 1587 believed that 1588 was going to be the end of the year. It was the end of the world. You know,
wow.
The end of society. And it could have been much worse. It could have been the beginning of the end of Protestant Europe. Everyone from England and northern Germany burned at the stake by Philip II, who loved nothing better than a good auto da fe after Mass on a Sunday afternoon.
Mm.
Or, you know, it could have been a whole different situation. It was certainly the end of an era. It was a major shift point. But everyone in Europe had this fascination with 1588 being the end of the world. And so we can learn a lot from, okay, it wasn't exactly the end of the world, but it was a rehearsal. It was the beginning of the forces that 400 years later are going to be coming back around to the same conclusion, the same crux point of extinction or enlightenment. It's really fascinating.
What was it that they were predicting would happen in 1588 that what was people fearing?
Well, they were fearing some great plague or war in which, you know, civilization itself would be shaken to its core.
Huh. And that something did happen, but it wasn't as bad as they thought it could be. Huh.
Well, it was the beginning of the end for the whole Spanish Empire. It was definitely the beginning of the end for the church. After the 30 Years' War, the whole shape of Europe changed. So you can say that, okay, it wasn't a cataclysmic huge shake-up like it could have been if the Armada had won, but it was definitely one of these major transition points.
Right.
So that the forces of rationalism and science and breaking the whole of the church and humanism and secularism began to grow, began to change the culture of Europe. Which again led 300-400 years later to World War I, World War II, the atomic bomb, etc.
Right. Well, we are definitely coming to a similar turning point in our history, except I think the planet has gotten too small for that type of cataclysm. But I do think we will, my opinion, meet extraterrestrial beings, and I mean, of course, they're here, but there'll be a shakeup of of that level where we'll, you know, encounter in the public, I think, beings that are far superior to us, and we'll have to decide, are we with them or against them, in a sense?
Well, I think the higher intelligence, the superior beings are not only here, they're inside every cell of your body.
Uh-huh.
Human beings don't appear to be what we might call galactic standard.
Oh, really? How do you know that?
In other words, you might sort of consider that humanity was once sort of a really nice paradise planet where people from all over the galaxy came to have vacations.
Yeah.
And then it sort of turned into a planetary banana republic with mm-hmm. the nasties in control, and now the tourists don't come anymore.
Right.
And now we actually have a dangerous disease. And we're not allowed to travel into or off of the planet. We're sort of quarantined. So,
but aren't we coming to the end of that quarantine? I think we can come to the end of that quarantine if we...
Well, only if we can demonstrate that we're actually galactic standard humans instead of just killer monkeys with a technological grudge on our shoulders.
Right, but we are getting help. Yeah.
Sure, we're getting help all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, well, we've only got a couple years left. Aren't you cutting it a little close?
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess that makes it exciting, doesn't it?
I guess close only counts in horseshoes, right?
Right, but, you know, the other interesting thing I noticed on your website, you talk about the hypercube, and when I was in England this year, I noticed a lot of the crop circles had to do with cubes.
Oh,
and. Yeah, talk about that. What's the significance of the cube and what we can really learn from multidimensional geometry?
Well, that seems to be what's going on in the sky in our solar system at the moment. And it, again, this geometric fourth dimensional, is at the core of the Enochian material. This is what John Dee did not understand because they didn't have the mathematics, but he could philosophically and sort of poetically describe it. And what we're basically talking about is a situation in which literally the space around our planet and our solar system are coming into an alignment with the center of the galaxy, which I'm sure you've heard about.
Right.
It produces a situation that is very similar to what's described in St. John's Revelation as the descent of the new Jerusalem. The heavenly cube of space matching up with the physical terrestrial cube of space.
Right.
And this is a very, again, poetic description for what's happening with the galactic alignment and how possibly the intersection of angular momentum and the alignments may be having this scalar or torsion effect that is part of what the angels are talking to us about in terms of higher dimensions. That may in fact be the, if you will, the trick to getting these filters in place so that the Carrington event doesn't toasty us. Now personally, if I were a betting man, I would bet on the Carrington event solar scenario being the most likely and the most destructive over the next 2 to 3 years.
Mm-hmm. But what about the but don't you've seen the crop circles? It seems like we are getting help, and there was this one particular one where there was a three-dimensional cube overlaid over. It looked like a hypercube or fourth.
Yep.
So we are getting clues to something. Like people like you could help. Yeah.
That's right. And it's just a matter of how you interpret those clues, okay?
Right.
The crop circle makers, and I use that very loosely, and I don't mean Bill and Ted from the local pub.
Right.
The crop circle makers are indeterminate whether they are extraterrestrial, ultra-terrestrial, or whatever, or simply archetypes, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they are telling a very specific story. Excuse me.
That's okay.
And that story has to do with what's going on in the geometry and in the world grid, if you will, the shape and structure of our planet. Mm-hmm. And there's a reason why they're appearing in the places they do, on Salisbury Plain and across the Michael and Mary line of England. Mm-hmm. That's because it's one of those places in which this unity of human beings and planet and spirituality has been worked on for such a long time that the resonance is there in the ground itself. And as we approach this energetic cusp, of course the crop circle makers are going to try to supply hints. They're, in fact, very similar to, if not exactly the same, as the DNA angels that Dee and Kelly were talking to. And it's part of a larger pattern. Are we going to pay attention to it? Well, I hope so. I hope enough people can pay attention to it. If not, then, well, it's been nice knowing you, killer monkeys. Let's just put it that way.
Well, I don't think all of us will be wiped out. I think the Earth has been through those cleansing cycles, Atlantis, Lemuria, all, and we do have a chance now to at least salvage some of it. And I think it is about becoming a spiritual being. And I think we're getting assistance. I don't think it's that blim. I think we have a chance to really, if I was betting, I would say we do prevent this. We somehow pull through in a way that's surprising to everybody,
Well, you have to sort of hope for that. You have to be a little bit optimistic.
Well, I am.
Today's Tuesday. Tuesdays and Thursdays are my pessimistic days. If you got me on Monday, Wednesday, or Friday, I'd be much more optimistic. So.
Well, that's good. But, I mean, because you bring out so many interesting, very sophisticated, amazing points, like about the intersecting cubes of space and how it crosses the galactic center. I mean, these are all keys for, if we understand this, we can then become galactic beings, I think,
Absolutely. The problem is, it's not the immediate spoon-fed soundbite, new age, listen-any goodie that everybody wants. It's like, okay, I will explain this to you, and it's very important, and you know, it might even be so important it'll help save the planet, but oh, by the way, there's mathematics in it. You have to actually work. This is going to require you to learn a new way to think, a new way to experience things. And you can just imagine the people backing away from that one.
Well, that's...
So, yeah, it's like this is something that's very interesting. It might even be literally what we need to make a huge difference in our survival rate. But to be honest with people and say, okay, this is going to require some effort. This is not just sit down and ohm 5 minutes a day. This is not the quick cure. This is only for those people who really want to, how should we put it, go deep into internal space and experience something completely novel, completely different from anything you've ever experienced before, and just possibly have some chance at conscious evolution, growing at least beyond the killer monkey toward that galactic human level. So it's worth it, but it's tough.
Well, how would we, if we were to take that seriously, where would we start to look, and how would we get to that place?
My friend Dan Winter has a huge chunk of what we have been calling for, 15 years now, since the mid-90s, the Complete Enochian Handbook. Mm-hmm. Up on his website, I think it's goldenmean.something.
Right. I'll look
So if you just search for Dan Winter plus Ophanic or Dan Winter plus Enochian, you should get it up on Google.
Okay, I'm going to get it right.
Huge bit of information there. If you want to just simply get in touch with me through vincentbridges.com, I will respond and can point some things in your direction. Like I said, we're at the point that we're not really ready to go prime time, because we're just simply trying to work through all the material in a logical way. Right. You have to understand, this is 400 years old. We have a lot of material, but no one has really subjected it to, for instance, an analysis as if it were a computer hardware software system. So we're looking at this in very different ways, and the results are quite exciting. There are many people who have, you know, quite different disciplines, mathematics, computer science, who've been kind of working on this problem over the last few years. And we're just beginning to the point that we have some degree of comprehension. So, yeah, vincentbridges.com, the Journal of the Western Mystery Tradition.com, that has many of our papers from the last few years, from our little, I don't know, group of psychonauts, our magical explorers. Mm-hmm. So those are two kind of resources that we already have in place.
What?
And there's john007d.com, which is a collection of John Dee material.
John
007.
I see that. But, you know, weren't people aware of this? I mean, Dee and Kelly were, but I'm sure the alchemists were aware of this time as well, this transformation, and they... Through alchemy, they were actually able to do something about it, right?
Well, that's a much broader subject, but alchemy is very tied into astronomy. And there are certain ways to work with stars and planets that do promote the transmutational process. But literally what the broader alchemical community, say, for instance, the Rosicrucians, believed in the late 16th century, is that it was possible to change time itself from the Iron Age, the Dark Age, into a Golden Age. And that's why the events in the late 16th century were very important. They were really trying to build a hermetic community, a hermetic society, that would, if it had had 400 years of development, really be ready to turn this moment in time into a Golden Age. Well, of course, that didn't work. The forces of reaction, the 30 Years' War, some pretty horrendous events prevented that. And so here we are at the moment, and we're, you know, sort of have a handicap, you might say. We're sort of limping along, not really knowing quite what we're doing. But hopefully we'll get enough of a clue by the time it's over and do what needs to be done.
But this is also what the Mayans, I think, from what I've read, were able to also perceive by certain alignments. They were able change the fabric of time, and maybe that's right?
If you're aware of time, you can do something to work with it, shall we say. And that seems to be the great thrust of the whole Mayan mythology. Is by being aware of the currents of time, then you knew how to dodge, if you will, surf, if you will. You could take advantage of the eddies and currents of time. And the Western tradition has a similar focus. That's been a lot of my research is connecting the dots. From Nostradamus's time, we have some very interesting material in a collection that is unfortunately known as the Lost Book of Nostradamus. Mm-hmm. Which was never lost and has nothing to do with Nostradamus. But there are seven amazing images in that collection of alchemical images that point directly and specifically to the time period we're in right now as mm-hmm. being this alchemical moment in which the transformation from the Dark Age to the Golden Age is possible. So,
well, isn't that exciting? Doesn't that really excite you? I mean, that seems like it's a great time to be playing with the world dynamics and...
Oh, sure. It's like that old Chinese curse, may you live in interesting times.
Right.
Well,
so
this is the most interesting times we could possibly live in.
Well, I'm excited by it because it's like, you know, we're at this turning point in the ages where... each one of us can really make a difference in how we just point our intention, point our spiritual focus. And
remember, focus is the key. Pay attention. Whatever we pay attention to during this transition is going to affect the next whole cycle of reality.
That's what other people have said that too, especially the next year's 11/11. I don't know if it's an alignment or just a thought form, but the woman named Shelley Yates said that the fabric of the Earth's energy body will take on a new form based on human intention on 11/11. So,
sounds great. I've been in the New Age so long. I was actually around for Solara's 11/11 back in 1991. So.
Right. I've been around there too. But the harmonic convergence, that was a great time, wasn't it?
Yes, it absolutely was. It absolutely was.
But 2012 is not any New Age fad, according to you. It's something that, I mean, this alignment on December 21st when the Earth, the Sun, and the Galactic Center.
It's happening right now. In 3 weeks or so, you can literally go out, and if you have a good view of the Eastern Horizon, you can watch the center of the universe, center of the galaxy, Ophiuchus, stand on the rim of the sky with the sun coming up right under Ophiuchus' left foot in complete alignment with the center of the galaxy. In other words, it's something that's been happening slowly over the last 10 years, and you can see it. You know, you can see it every December 21st or whenever the solstice may fall.
Right, so this solstice will be, with astrology, you know, certain alignments do affect behaviors consciousness. So,
the most important clue, the most significant clue to how long-lasting and how deep our awareness of this particular point in time is actually the constellation of Ophiuchus. Ophiuchus is the 13th sign of the zodiac. It's the 13th constellational group that touches the ecliptic. And traditionally, in every culture around the planet, it represents the same thing. It is Horus the Elder fighting with Apophis to create reality. It is Marduk and Tiamat. It is Saint Michael and the Dragon of Revelation. It always has the same meaning. And that meaning is, when Ophiuchus is standing on the sun, you know, it's an alignment with something really important. And, of course, that's a key moment in discovering when that catastrophic wave, that burp from the sun, that burp from the center of the galaxy, whatever it is, it's a key moment in timing that catastrophic moment, that moment in which chaos might erupt, that we have to
Vincent, did we lose you? Vincent? Hello? Oh, well, I think Vincent was saying that, yeah, that is a key moment, and I would definitely check out his website for some of these updates, because this is sort of new for me, even though I've been studying the ideas of 2012 for a long time. This is a really an original perspective. And he also talks about on his website this intersection of these different points in space. So just trying back just to finish up this conversation. This is New Realities with Alan Steinfeld.
Hello?
Yeah, sorry, we just lost you for a second.
Oh, that's okay.
But you were just saying about that point, about, how do you spell that constellation?
Ophiuchus.
Ophiuchus, okay.
Ophiuchus, O-P-H-I-U-C-U-S.
So just to wrap up, you're saying every time that plays a critical role in our sky, there could be some not so fun times ahead of us, you're saying?
Yeah, it's a major 6,000 plus year, you know, four of them in the great year shift point. Every time the equinox or the solstice lines up under Ophiuchus or the Serpent Holder or St. Michael under their left foot, then something is going on. And again, that's the alignment directly to the center of the galaxy. Mm. The center of our galaxy is directly under Ophiuchus's left foot, in between the arrow of Sagittarius and the stinger of the scorpion. There it is, the center of the galaxy. So traditionally, throughout history, that has been a significant constellation and a significant moment.
What happened the last time that came into alignment?
Well, 6,000 years ago, it was the fall equinox, and that's roughly the beginning of human culture, human civilization.
So that was a good thing. That was a positive thing. Of course, it was a fall from grace, in a sense, because we started to...
That depends on whether you're a hunter-gatherer or an agriculturalist. Cain or Abel, right?
Right. It's interesting. The agriculturist killed the hunter-gatherer, which is, I guess...
That's right. So that was kind of the end of their world 6,000 years ago.
So what do you see is the end of what world is going to be coming up and what world will be beginning? Because we're obviously in the mix right now, because those two worlds existed side by side for a while, and now we're... What do you predict?
If we actually do survive Carrington events and other shakeups on the planet, then whatever culture or civilization evolves from that, consciously evolves from it, is going to be so different from us that we won't really have any way of imagining what it will be like.
But
shift as profound as that between the hunter-gatherers and the agriculturalists.
But the shift must, I mean, that culture must already have its seeds in place on some level right now, just what you're saying, the psychic ability.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely, so. But to be able to predict what will grow from that, there's so many variables that it's almost an impossibility, except to say that should we all survive, our great-grandkids will think we were literally dinosaurs. The shift will be that profound.
Well,
but to say what form it will take, that's pretty hard to do.
Well, it is exciting times, and they do talk about the Aquarian age, right? I mean, so we're moving into that. So we have to sort of wrap up. I really appreciate this conversation, and you've made insights into the times that we're in now that I haven't heard any other place, and I appreciate your research. So,
you're quite welcome.
Thank you, Vincent. You're going to be going to Europe with Dan Winter?
I won't necessarily be going with Dan, but yeah, Dan and I have a few dates in common, and I'm doing a Southern France Cathar Mary Magdalene tour with Roger Green in the spring. Going to do the Gypsy Festival and all sorts of fun things. I'll be in Europe, you know, most of winter, spring next year.
Great. Maybe I'll meet up with you with Roger. Thanks so much for this conversation, and maybe we'll do it again at some point. Okay?
All right. Well, just let me know.
Okay. VincentBridges.com is the website, right?
And John007D.com and Journal of the Western Mystery Tradition.com.
Thanks again. That was great. I appreciate
all right.
it.
Well, thank you, Alan. We'll talk later.
Thank you. Thank you. This is Alan Steinfeld talking to Vincent Bridges about the coming changes, really, from a Western mystery perspective. And the work of John Dee. If you want to reach me, check my website, newrealities.com. Email me at newrealities@earthlink.net. Thanks for listening.
I walk in fire. Feel the flame, feel the pain. You can go on.
In the Fire by Green Fire.
I walk Thank you.